This Is Where We Live. I'm Lucy Nalbathanchel. Spring training is underway, and next month there might actually be minor league baseball in downtown Hartford. Maybe you've heard of them. The Yard Goats? The team stadium is slated to open, finally, in mid-April, but that's a show for another day. Today we'll hear why Major League Baseball has broken from tradition with rule changes that have irked some baseball fans. Does the end of the intentional walk mean anything to you? That's coming up later. Speaking of entertainment, we wanted to check in on the latest plan to open a third casino in Connecticut. Now this week, the Mashantucket, Pequot, and Mohegan tribes chose East Windsor as the town where they want to build a $300 million casino complex. And yesterday, the tribes and East Windsor officials gathered for a signing ceremony, formalizing their partnership.
The choice could not be more simple. Will Connecticut sit back and let our jobs and revenue head over the border to Massachusetts, or will we fight back?
That's Rodney Butler, chairman of the Mashantucket Pequot Tribe. That's audio from WTNH. Now, this is not a done deal. Here with us to explain the process is Kenneth Gosselin, real estate and financial services reporter for the Hartford Current. Ken was here a few months ago when we were talking about casinos. We're happy to see you back.
Well, thank you for having me.
Last time we spoke, the Mashantucket Pequots and Mohegan tribes had actually reopened their search for a possible third casino. Back then, there were a number of towns in the running, Windsor Locks, East Windsor, East Hartford, and Hartford. Remind us again why the tribes are pushing for this third casino. We did hear that clip from Rodney Butler putting it very concisely.
Well, there's very big concern about what the impact of the new casino and entertainment complex being built by MGM up in Springfield will, how it will affect the gaming industry in Connecticut. And this is seen as a way to kind of respond to that. There's a couple of issues here. There's the jobs that are associated with gaming, and there's also the money that the state gets every month from the slot revenue that goes into the two casinos. And there's concern that both of those could go down.
So slot revenue, 25% of slot revenue in that original gaming compact signed years ago with the state of Connecticut, slot revenue is eroding?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. There's, of course, when Foxwoods and Mohegan Sun first opened back about 25 years ago now, there weren't very many casinos around. They were really the only game in town. And now, over the course of time, we've seen them open in Rhode Island, New York. Now, of course, Massachusetts is getting into it. So there is a lot of competitive pressure on casinos now.
I understand East Windsor was actually eliminated in the first round of the proposals from towns. And then the search was reopened. A lot of people are wondering why. What brought the town back into the running? And they're the winners.
Yes, yes. The tribe said that they wanted to reopen because some of the proposals on the table, particularly the one in East Hartford, had changed pretty dramatically. The developer kept adding new sweeteners to the deal, adding something with Hartford in there. And so they really felt that they needed to go back out again because some of these had changed so dramatically. So East Windsor came back with the showcase proposal. And as you said, they were selected.
For people who may not go up to East Windsor or know that part of the state, tell us about the location where this third casino could go if approved again by the state legislature.
Okay, so it's one. If you've traveled on I-91 going up north, you have seen it. It is the old Showcase Cinema site, kind of a setback up on a hill, but you can definitely see it from I-91. And for a very long time, 10 years or more, it's been vacant. And so that is where they hope to place it.
And we're going to hear from the first selectman from East Windsor, Robert Maynard, coming up a little later in the show, as well as some East Windsor residents. This is Where We Live. I'm Lucy Nalbathanchel. We're talking about casinos. Again, the tribes, the Mashantucket Pequots and the Mohegans, they selected East Windsor for this potential third casino in the state of Connecticut. We know this is a contentious issue. Where do you stand? What do you think about this plan to open a casino to compete with MGM Springfield, a casino that will open in Springfield, I believe, in September of 2018 or so?
That's correct.
You can join the conversation, 860-275-7266. Let's talk about some drama that might be brewing in the General Assembly. Again, this bill to allow the tribes to open a casino off reservation land in East Windsor, now that they've chosen the town. That's before the Public Safety Committee. There's another bill now in play. Tell us about that.
That's correct, Lucy. The bill has been introduced now and is expected to go to public hearing next Thursday, opening that wants to open up the process to more potential operators to submit proposals. And those may not be just focused on North Central Connecticut. It may be another part of the state. The proponents behind that bill are saying we really should look at this more broadly. When this kind of developed back in the beginning of 2015, the legislature kind of just focused on the tribes that were here, okay, the Mohegans and the Mashantucket Pequots, and created this two-step process where you go out and find a site and then come back to us, and then we'll decide whether we want to actually expand gaming off tribal reservations.
How would this competing bill jeopardize the relationship the state of Connecticut has with the tribes?
Well, they say that it wouldn't necessarily put, you know, scrap the plan, but it would just give, the state a more broad view of different ideas for expanding gaming and whether maybe gaming should be expanded at all. And, it could create some tension between the state and the tribes, which, you know, they've had a pretty good relationship over the years.
It's hard to believe it's already March. The committee now is under the gun to get bills voted on before they go to the full General Assembly. Any tension within the committee? There are obviously two co-chairs of the Public Safety Committee. Mm-hmm. They seem to be on different sides of the issue.
They are very much on different sides of the issue. One of the co-chairs, Senator Tim Larson from East Hartford, has been and continues to be a very firm supporter of what the tribes, what their vision is for East Windsor, for a satellite casino in East Windsor, where it's the development agreement has been assigned. But then there's also his other co-chair, Representative Joe Verengia, who really does think that there should be a broader look at this. So you have two very different viewpoints right at the very head of the committee.
When we talk about the promises that this third casino could bring, can we break that down a little bit more? So there again, MGM Springfield will be opening in the fall of next year. If this third casino gets approval and opens in East Windsor, what does that mean in terms of jobs and in terms of revenue for the state?
Okay, well, they're saying that we'll preserve some of the revenue that is there, and we won't see a continued erosion, okay? But they're also saying that it could bring many jobs to the region, 1,700 plus the construction jobs. And they're, for the region and for the town, they have made a commitment in their agreement to hire a certain percentage from East Windsor and then from the 25-mile radius around East Windsor. Okay, so there is benefit for there in terms of jobs.
Whenever we hear about construction projects in Connecticut, there is concern whether all of the workers will be coming from the local region. Any concern that, you know, there is a portion that will be set aside for people that are around North Central Connecticut, but a lot of these jobs will be filled from out of state.
That's correct, and that concern has come up already in the legislative hearing last week, and also at the town meeting in East Windsor last Saturday, that was also expressed. So, yes, there is a concern there.
And in terms of the location, North Central Connecticut, MGM has been very vocal in this whole process because they stand to lose with this third casino potentially open again in near Springfield. Why North Central Connecticut? Why not, as ever, we've talked about this before, why not the southwest portion of the state?
Well, originally, even before this process started back in 15, there was some thought that maybe we would have a few around the state. But the General Assembly focused on North Central Connecticut because that was close to Springfield, could kind of go head-to-head, okay? But there are different schools of thought as to whether people will actually stop in East Windsor and not go just a few extra miles up to Springfield. Yesterday, Chairman Kevin Brown of the Mohegans said that he believes people will stop there and that there are people who gamble who are called convenience gamblers and that they like to be kind of close to where they're going. And he cited a 19-mile radius, okay, and that he said that he believes there are enough people based on their population of people who come to the casinos down in southeastern Connecticut that this will be successful. He also cited a situation up near Buffalo, New York, where there's a tribe up there who operates two
Seneca Nation.
Right, two casinos very close to each other, and both, he says, are doing okay.
Also, controversy with how East Windsor approved the development agreement. It was up to the Board of Selectmen. Again, we're going to hear from one of the officials from East Windsor, Robert Maynard. He's the first selectman. Some residents said, why not a referendum? Why don't you let the residents put this to a vote? Mm-hmm.
Yes, that definitely did come up at Saturday's meeting. And the Board of Selectmen and their attorneys said that, no, we don't need to do that. Our charter allows us to do it this way. And they did also cite the need for, it was a timely matter here, that the tribes had to get something to the committee, the Public Safety Committee, because they have a deadline of March 16th to get something to the full House and Senate. So they're definitely under a time constraint. But there definitely was a feeling that, you know, just because you approve, this doesn't mean the whole town would.
Reaction from Windsorlocks. They were in the running. There was some vocal opposition there. East Windsor, easiest path for this casino to open? Because there's not a lot of opposition from at least the officials, elected officials?
Right. Well, I think that Windsorlocks was definitely, you know, I talked to the first selectman, Chris Kervick, the day after. And yes, there was definitely some disappointment that they weren't chosen, okay? So, yes, there was opposition there. But I think there was opposition in both places.
This is Where We Live. I'm Lucy Nalpathanchil. In studio with me is the Hartford Current's Ken Gosselin, who's been reporting for some time now this project, this idea, proposal for the Mashantucket, Pequots, and Mohegan tribes to open a third casino in Connecticut. The idea is to compete against MGM Springfield, a $950 million facility slated to open in Springfield. This casino, Ken, in East Windsor, if it opens, how does that compare?
To Springfield. Much smaller, of course. Mm-hmm. You know, it would be only 200,000 square feet. Half would be gaming, half would be retail, restaurant, you know, maybe some little entertainment, but it wouldn't be this sprawling complex that they're talking about up in Springfield.
Now, coming up, we're going to hear from town leaders and residents from East Windsor about the project. Again, it's not a done deal yet. The General Assembly must approve the casino deal. What do you think? Do you think the legislature should permit the tribes to open a third casino off reservation land to compete with MGM Springfield? You can join the conversation, 860-275-7266. Email wherewelive at WMPR.org. Find us on Facebook and Twitter at Where We Live. This is Where We Live. I'm Lucy Nalpathanchil. Earlier this week, East Windsor was chosen by the Mashantucket, Pequots, and Mohegan tribes as a site for a potential third casino, a casino that officials hope will compete with MGM Springfield, set to open late next year. Now, do you live in East Windsor or one of the surrounding towns in North Central Connecticut? Would you support a new casino and the promise of jobs and extra revenue? You can join the conversation, 860-275-7266. In studio with me is Ken Gosselin, real estate and financial services reporter for the Hartford Current. And joining the conversation now is East Windsor's first selectman, Bob Maynard. First Selectman Maynard, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So tell us a little bit about why you and the board support this deal and what benefits your town will get.
Well, first of all, I think Ken Gosselin did a very good job. I was listening to him, and he has a very good understanding of the casino and the process. So feel free to come in and add something. I want to say, as Ken did, that this is very important to the North Central region of Connecticut. So it really goes beyond East Windsor. And in the North Central region, it's kind of declined over the years. And right now, with the addition of this casino and what's going on just across the river in Windsor Locks. Now, East Windsor has a walking bridge, an old walking bridge that has two lanes of traffic on it, too, and has a wide sidewalk. People fish off the bridge. And in the 50s, people used to walk across the bridge, get on the train at the train station there in Windsor Locks and go into Hartford to work in the insurance companies and then come home and walk across the bridge to where home was in East Windsor. And recently, in the last I'm not sure how many years, 20, 30 years, the train station was moved away from that area to a commuter parking lot. Now the state of Connecticut is going to bring back the old, or revitalize the old train station and add a new portion to it, and start to revitalize Main Street in Winter Locks. And actually, people still can walk. The casino is only about 7/10 of a mile away from, and on the same road is 140. It's a state highway. And so between the new commuter rail that's coming through Windsor Locks, they're going to put a second rail in, so it's quite expensive. And this will allow 12 trains a day to go from Hartford to Springfield and back. And so that coupled with a casino in the area would really revitalize North Central Connecticut and all the towns surrounding it, which is Enfield and Suffield and Windsor Locks and Windsor and South Windsor. So it would really help our region of the state. And as Ken mentioned, the state is going to lose approximately $70 million in tax revenue to the MGM Resorts International Casino. And being a municipal manager, I realize the state is in dire need of money right now. The state gives us funding in the sense it's a cost reimbursement. And last year they gave us $6 million. They had been doing it right along for several years. And now this year they cut it down to $5.5 million, and actually going into next year, the budget is proposed to cut $2.5 million away from that. So we've been reduced 50% in the last 2 years, and that's very difficult for us to make up. We only have 11,400 people living here, and it's very difficult for us to tax to make up that. So we really kind of need the revenue that would come from the casino.
And can we talk about the revenue that you expect if this deal again gets approval from the legislature, for East Windsor?
As I said, there would be revenue for the state of Connecticut, and there would.
But what about your town, Selectman? Specifics about the money your town will be getting.
The specifics about the money my town would get, and this is something that is in the development agreement, and it's available on our website. Well, we worked with the tribal nations for a long period of time to establish this agreement, and we think it's beneficial to everybody, including the people in the region. But the specifics are the tribal nations will give us $3 million up front, and that will be 15 months before the casino opens. So this will allow us to hire policemen, train policemen, and otherwise put money towards the impact of the casino in East Windsor. Then once the casino opens, and that would be determined by the certificate of occupancy, so our building inspector would say that this is a safe building and you can open the building, then they will start paying us taxes on the assessment, which will probably come to about $5.5 million a year. So we'll receive $5.5 million, and then in addition to that, they will give us an impact grant of $3 million a year, as long as they continue to do business. So actually, once they open, the town will get $8.5 million a year. Mm-hmm. And the $3 million grant will be used exclusively to mitigate the impact of the casino on East Windsor.
So it sounds like, I mean, it's a good deal for East Windsor because you're going to be seeing extra revenue, but with anticipation of losing money from the state as these budget years keep progressing with $1 billion deficits, do you anticipate the town will just break even?
And that's what I thought the minute I saw reduced in our cost sharing with the state. I said, my gosh, they're taking a casino away from several of the municipalities in the region. So I do hope the casino will come here. It will help us mitigate that, but the state is really turning to other sources for revenue.
And what about stress on social services in the town of East Windsor? Tell me about that. You mentioned 11,000 residents. Tell me about the people and the needs that they have and some of the concern that with a casino, you're going to see more of a stress on social services because of some of the things that casinos may bring to your community.
Well, I would be more concerned if there wasn't a very much larger casino 14 miles up the road. And the people who, one of the major, social problems or human services problems would be gambling addiction. And I can certainly sympathize with the people who say gambling addiction is a bad thing and hurts families. It does. And addictive behavior is something that human beings have to deal with, and how we deal with that is another question. And we in our community and in New England and in the state have a terrible addiction problem with heroin. That's killing our children and our adults too. We really have to address that. And I'm not saying that that's something that's different, but. Taking other addictions like smoking or alcohol, that's behavior that hurts people, and we have to, through education, really address that. And I know that the state, or not the state, but the country actually put an amendment in which was prohibition that prevented the sale of alcohol, and that didn't work out. They had to change the amendment, the Constitution back, and so it would be sold. Mm-hmm. So I think there's a danger in trying to eliminate something that can be detrimental. But you're right, we have to deal with any problems that, and even, like I say, if they don't build a casino here in East Windsor, we'll still have to deal with the gambling problem that is going to be caused 14 miles away.
This is Where We Live. I'm Lucy Nalpathanchel. That was First Selectman of East Windsor, Robert Maynard. Today we're talking about the potential of a third casino opening in the town of East Windsor. And now I wanted to go to a resident of the town, Denise Terry, who's also senior pastor at the East Granby Congregational Church. Denise, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm glad to be able to speak.
Tell us about why you're opposed to this plan.
I think my biggest concern is that the casino will take advantage of and prey on a vulnerable population of people, including older adults and those with already limited incomes and people with addiction issues. As Mr. Maynard said, the casino is expecting to make all of its money primarily off of the idea of convenience gamblers. People who live within 19 miles of this casino, and they're anticipating, the MMCT Ventures is anticipating $308 million of revenue a year coming into that casino. That's draining $308 million out of the communities that are within 19-mile radius. I'm deeply concerned about issues related to addiction, issues related to people spending their money at the casino and not having disposable income to spend at restaurants, entertainment avenues in the area, money to pay their mortgages, money to keep up and maintain their homes and property values, issues related to the stresses of spending too much money on gambling that relate to bankruptcies, that relate to divorce, that relate to domestic violence. There's a lot of stresses, and I think one of my big issues is that the Board of Selectmen has really selectively received information and not educated themselves in some very readable, easy-to-find information about what are the social costs, and they are huge in casinos.
Well, Denise, I'd like to have the First Selectman respond before we take some more calls. First Selectman Maynard, you've heard these concerns before. You and your other selectmen voted in the development agreement last weekend. How do you respond?
Well, my first response would be, hello, Denise.
And
I've talked to Denise about this, and we've had this conversation before. What Denise says is correct, that the a casino has negative impact on people, some people, not all people. I plan to, if actually there's probably a vast minority, I plan to go to the casino myself. I'm looking forward to that, and I'm not addicted to gambling. But I think what you have to take into account is, and I know Denise is a resident here in East Windsor, that, as she said, within a 19-mile radius, anybody who is addicted to gambling or is, needs to gamble and will lose their savings gambling can go right up 14 miles away to this magnificent casino in Springfield. So it's not going to minimize the impact of gambling on the town of East Windsor at all. And we would certainly like the revenue to help the people in our town and in our region who suffer from the gambling that's going to take place in just 14 miles away from our town. But I'd also like to point out too that the tribal nations live in Connecticut, and Connecticut is their home, and they've been part of Connecticut for longer than the residents of East Windsor have farmed this land, and it's our home too. So this partnership with the Mashantucket, Pequot, and Mohegan tribal nations is something that's really going to preserve Connecticut or help preserve mm-hmm. Connecticut, and we're proud to be in this partnership with them to build up north central Connecticut and save money for Connecticut.
Well, before we take some calls, I wanted to get some perspective from other residents in the state. I wanted to go back to the Hartford Courant's Ken Gosselin in studio with me. We keep hearing this term convenience gamblers who may be coming off exit 45, I believe, in East Windsor that could go to this potential third casino if it opens. Any studies on whether these convenience gamblers would then, you know, check out some other restaurants or attractions in East Windsor, or are they just going to strictly go to this casino and then go back home?
I have not seen any study that talked about whether they would go to other venues in a town, okay? I mean, that could be possible because they might be driving right by there. One concern with casinos, though, is that once you get in, you are probably going to stay there. And in the case of East Windsor, you know, there'll be restaurants in there, there'll be shops in there. There may be, as I said earlier, small entertainment venues where bands might play and such. So whether people would actually then leave the casino and then go to dinner somewhere else, that I have not seen a study, but once you get in, sometimes you stay in.
Mm. Nick's calling from Bristol. Nick, you're on the show.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. It's unfortunate that finally I get for WNPR and I disagree, okay, with a lot of things that are being said there. You know, Connecticut already established an economy of addiction. Okay, that's a fact. And people have learned how to handle their own addiction. And I do agree that there's people out there that get carried away and they go overboard. But to me, the issue shouldn't be gambling or any other form of addiction. It's how to attract jobs in the state of Connecticut, skilled jobs, jobs that pay a standard of living that people can afford to raise a family and have extra money to gamble or smoke and drink if they want, whatever they want to do, okay? But if Connecticut continues on the route of not encouraging companies, manufacturers, high tech to come here, establish their business, and encourage growth within the communities, it doesn't matter if you put a casino there. You know, put one in Waterbury. You know, what's the big difference? The fact is, there's students out there that have high student loans they can't afford to pay back because they can't find a decent paying job. Casinos don't pay. Okay, that's a proven fact. They pay minimum wage, a little above. All right, most of the money get there is on tips, gratuities, right? And so, you know, there's restaurants in there. Okay, why would you put a whole score of restaurants in a casino and then wonder why they're not going into the town?
Well, Nick, you make a lot of good points. I wish there was a legislator that can answer some of that. We did reach out to Senate leadership. They were unable to come on the show. Also to one of the, at least the co-chairs of the Public Safety Committee. But again, good points. Residents, Ken, who see that the state should be focused more on attracting businesses that pay good wages, not how do we get a buck off the person if they go in and gamble.
Well, that certainly has been part of the debate here as to the kinds of jobs that are created and certainly where it fits into the broader economic development strategy of the state. And, of course, the state is trying to attract other types of businesses here.
I want to go to Jan and Avon. Jan, you're on the show.
Hi. I agree with Denise. I believe the pastor wholeheartedly. Nick had some very good points. This Mr. Maynard, I'm just ashamed of what is wrong is wrong. They're taking money from many, many people who really don't have it, who could be spending their money in productive, constructive ways, and it's going to the rich. Let's do things that are right and honorable and will enhance people's lives. Gambling, casinos are just disgusting in so many ways. And if there is a little bit of good, it could be done a millionfold with other venues. And it's just clear cut to me and so many other people. It's wrong. Mm-hmm. And let's have a chocolate sundae and eat 100 of them because it tastes good. This is just insanity.
Well, thank you, Jan. Thank you so much for your comment. I'm curious, Ken, but before we go back to the East Windsor selectman and resident Denise Terry to respond a little bit before we head to break, we're hearing, whenever we do shows about casinos and gambling and whether the state should be, you know, taking a revenue from people, maybe on fixed income or the working poor, you know, a lot of times we're hearing from people who are opposed to casinos. So what is the dynamic within the General Assembly? These lawmakers who represent these residents?
Well, I think there's a dichotomy here that we have. I think that some of the concerns that have been raised from your callers and from your other guests, those exist definitely in the General Assembly right now. There are a couple of very high-profile senators who have expressed just those mm-hmm. concerns. And so, but there's a tension between that and what do we do to, in a state that has a very difficult budget situation, to try to, you know, keep revenue here, not just even bring it, but just to keep it from eroding. So it is there's a very big tension there.
And what's the take from the governor's office?
Well, the governor is, you know, of course, he signed the bill that allowed the tribes to go out and search for a location, okay? But just yesterday, he is now looking at some of the very, very important legal issues that still remain that, you know, could even stand in the way of this expansion, okay, as to what kind of court challenges there might be. How does the, you know, expand the tribes expanding off their reservations to a private piece of property, a commercial casino, affect the money that they pay to the state, okay, every month through the slot revenue? And those issues have not been fully sorted out yet. And what the governor did yesterday, he went to the attorney general, who has expressed some concerns in the past, and just say, we need to have a legal opinion on this that really gives us direction. Mm.
Spencer's calling from Norwich. Spencer, you're on the show.
Hey, how's it going?
Well.
So I just wanted to say I support this the idea of this casino coming in because it definitely benefits the work that I do. I work in the music industry for a backline company which rents musical instruments. And I literally just left the casino in Uncasville dropping off equipment. So any new client that we can get, I think that's a great thing.
All right, Spencer. Well, thank you for your call. I wanted to go back to First Selectman Maynard. Again, your town, your Board of Selectmen approved this development agreement. Now it's the ball is in the legislature's court. So what do you think is going to happen? Do you believe that a casino is going to be able to open in your town?
That's up to the legislature, and that'll be an interesting discussion and the vote that they have. But I just wanted to answer something that Nick said, and I appreciate what he said, that the casino here, if we get one, will have 1,200 full-time jobs, and the full-time jobs will pay $43,000 a year plus benefits, their union jobs. So those are good jobs, and you can raise a family on that. Also, the jobs that will be created by the casino is just like your last call-in person said. There's ancillary businesses that support the casino, like instrumental or landscaping or electricians and many others. So there's jobs created there, and those are good jobs too. So this will be a good thing as far as jobs goes for the region.
And Denise Terry, again, you're an East Windsor resident. You oppose this plan. What's next for town residents? Again, the agreement's been reached with the tribes. Do you feel like now you're just going to wait to see if the legislature responds and listens to residents like yourself?
Well, we are not just sitting around waiting. We're very active. In fact, today, East Windsor residents who are also registered voters can sign a petition that would force a non-binding referendum, but would give the legislature information about the fact that this is not something that everyone in East Windsor is interested in having in our town. Today at St. Catherine's on Windsorville Road in Broadbrook from 4 o'clock to 6 o'clock, tomorrow from 1 o'clock to 3 o'clock at St. John's Church on 92 Main Street in East Windsor, residents are welcome to sign a petition that would force a non-binding referendum. Monday evening at the high school at 7 o'clock, you could also sign the petition there, where we will be having an informational forum with former Congressman Bob Steele, who will speak. He was the congressman from the district where the two existing casinos are and has written a book titled The Curse, Big Time Gambling's Seduction of a Small New England Town. He will be there. I will be there. Members of the Coalition Against Casino Expansion in Connecticut will be there to ask questions and inform the community about the social and economic costs of a potential casino. Also, there is a public hearing of the Public Safety and Security Committee to take place next Thursday, the 9th, at 8:30. At the Legislative Office Building, and we are encouraging every East Windsor resident who is against this casino to show up and write a testimony and speak for 2 minutes with the legislators about your thoughts about this casino. This is definitely not a done deal. The legislators are not of one mind about this, and if they know that this community does not want this, they will act on our behalf, we believe. So we are not just sitting back and waiting. One of the things I do want to comment on that Mr. Maynard said about jobs, as was noted earlier, in the deal that the town has made with the casino operators, they have only offered that they will make, quote-unquote, reasonable efforts to achieve a workforce with only 4% of the workers coming from the town. That's 68 jobs. They will make a reasonable effort, we're not sure what that means, to give another 255 jobs to people who live within 25 miles, which would include a lot of Massachusetts residents. They, in the state legislative building last week in public hearing, said that they do not anticipate hiring any new vendors from this area, that they already have 1,700 vendors that they use, and that they're just going to be trying to keep them in business. The other 1,377 jobs they have promised to people who they have already laid off at their other two casinos in the southern part of the state. So this is not going to be a big jobs producer for our region. And of the 1,700 jobs that they anticipate needing for construction, they would not commit to the legislature last week that any of those jobs would go to Connecticut people. In fact, they acknowledge that it will be a lot cheaper for them to hire construction labor from Massachusetts.
All right, Denise, unfortunately, we're running out of time, but we do want to thank you. Denise Terry, East Windsor resident, also First Selectman of East Windsor, Robert Maynard. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much.
And Ken Gosselin, real estate and financial services reporter for the Hartford Courant. I'm betting you're going to be at that public hearing next week.
Oh, yes, I will.
Well, I appreciate your time. Again, we were talking about this plan to open a third casino in East Windsor. Now it's up to the state legislature. I'm sure we'll have an update in another month or so. And right now, we're going to actually go to break. When we come back, we're going to talk baseball. This is Where We Live. This is Where We Live. I'm Lucy Nalpathanchil. Now we're switching over to sports. Over the last 4 years, there have been a number of changes to rules in professional sports, from the placement of kickoffs in the NFL to overtime shootouts in the NHL. But what about rule changes in the sport known as America's pastime? To tell us more, we're joined now by Frankie Graziano, sports producer at Connecticut Public Broadcasting Network. Hi, Frankie.
Good morning, Lucy. How are you today?
I'm doing well. So this all revolves around something called the intentional walk. Tell us what that is and what's the rule change.
Yeah, seems to be a lot of panic about it. It's pretty funny. The intentional walk has been around forever. It's been a staple of baseball. This is not the first time that its existence has been into question. They were thinking about banning it in 1920 because of how boring they thought it was, the MLB, because they were getting less action. So recently, in the war on dead time, as what Jason Stark called it when we interviewed him for our WNPR piece, they are looking at cutting time. And Rob Manfred, who's the commissioner, this is his platform. Since 2005 or 2015, he introduced these pace of play rules, and they're really, really trying to speed up the game because they're thinking young kids aren't watching the game anymore. There was a Harris poll in like 1985 that said that the game of baseball was the second most popular sport, just 1% behind the NFL. They did the same poll in 2015, and it was 18% behind it.
Now, you mentioned Jason Stark. You interviewed him, ESPN.com senior baseball writer. Here's what he told you.
He wants to increase the pace of action and wants to decrease dead time. So that's where the intentional walk change fits in. It's symbolic to say this is the first shot in that war on dead time.
Now, when I asked you about intentional walks, tell us about the strategy. Why is it used?
Well, basically, it is a strategy play, as you mentioned. You want to put a guy on if you're afraid that he's going to kill you with his bat and hit a home run.
Barry Bonds.
We'll get to that in a second. Or it's just simply, hey, I think I can get the double play. Let me walk this next guy. When you talk about Barry Bonds, he won the MVP 4 years in a row from 2001 to 2004. He was intentionally walked 275 times. Only six times in the game's history was somebody walked with the bases loaded. Buck Showalter, who was Arizona's manager, said, I don't want to deal with this guy. Bases loaded, lets a run come in, he walks him. Barry Bonds was that dangerous at that time because he hit a home run every nine times he stepped up to the plate in 2001. Babe Ruth didn't even do that. So the thought was, let's intentionally walk this guy. And now they're getting rid of that. They're saying, hey, you don't have to throw four pitches out of the zone. All you got to do is make a signal, and we'll be able to put that guy on automatically with the umpire getting the signal from the coach at the dugout.
What does this moment mean for the Major League Baseball? So the idea that this rule change has been enacted just recently, are people worried we're going to be hearing about more changes to this traditional sport that people love?
Even the most hardened baseball purist is down with them speeding the game up. They're cool with that. It's more of a thing where the baseball purist is saying, hey, it's only 35 seconds per average game that you're getting rid of with the intentional walk. Because of plate discipline, Lucy, because of the fact that these guys are just swinging at every single pitch nowadays, they don't have to intentionally walk people as much as they used to. So they're saying, hey, you don't have to do that. You don't have to get rid of this because it's fun to watch these guys who have never before this level. They do in college, but in high school they don't know how to throw an intentional walk because that rule, they just put them on like they do at the majors now. They've been doing that forever. But it's funny to watch these major league pitchers do that. But the way that Major League Baseball is going for it and what Jason Stark was intimating in the interview is this is the first step in eliminating dead time in this war on dead time. And this is one of the things that they're trying to do. It's going to go further, but this is just a small step. That's what Major League Baseball's thinking.
You keep using the phrase dead time. So what about a pitch clock?
pitch clock. That's where the purists and the players are panicking. I mean, when we first started working on the story a couple of weeks ago, it was announced that Major League Baseball approved it. The players didn't say yes right away because they're saying, just as what everybody was worried about, where are we going with this? What are you going to do next? The pitch clock worries the pitchers a little bit because it's a little more pressure to get the ball to the plate. They like to work a little bit faster, so it may help in the long end, but batters are saying, hey, I can't call a timeout. What's the deal with that? And then there was the scary rule that I think panicked everybody.
What's that?
They're trying something out in the near future where in the lowest reaches of minor leagues, they're going to put a base runner on second if we go to extra innings. I'm a crazy baseball fan, so I've seen a 20-inning game.
I can't tell.
Nobody will watch a 20-inning game. I don't know who, Lucy. But in the furthest reaches of minor leagues, to save these guys from destroying their arms and having to use a lot of pitchers, they're saying, hey, let's start with the extra innings with a guy on second base. That'll give us a chance to see someone score quicker. And everybody's saying, hey, that better not happen to my damn major leagues. They don't want to see that in the future. But to quell that, Manfred said on ESPN's Mike and Mike a week ago that would never happen at the major league level because they just want to save arms at the lower level. And Jason Stark said players would never agree to that, so don't expect that anytime soon. That's the one that had everybody going.
This is Frankie Graziano, sports producer at Connecticut Public Broadcasting Network. Now, you also talked to some local people who love the game, who are coaches. Tell us about this East Catholic High School coach that you interviewed in Manchester and what he said about the rule change.
Martin Fiore has coached East Catholic. They're a really good baseball team around here, and he's not complaining about the rule at the high school level because they've done it forever. That's all he knows. But he's saying at the major league level, him and his peers are saying, why do this now? It's almost pointless because, again, you're only shaving a few seconds off. And he comes from that purist background where he says, hey, it's a strategy game. You know, why are we looking to do these things further? It's not necessarily about the intentional walk now. It's what are you going to do later? And he comes from that side of the coin.
Now, you alluded to this earlier, but with this rule change now in the MLB, what's going to happen to the rules in college and high school ball?
Well, I guess you have to watch college now because college still does the intentional walk the way that everybody is used to the traditional four-pitch walk. And I bet your listeners that are hearing this, if they're not the ones that like this fun conversation, they're like, what the hell is the difference between the four pitch and the other thing? But at the same time, it is one of those things where on the same day, on February 22nd, when MLB approved these rules, they did say, this did happen at the college level where somebody had an intentional walk mishap that people like to see, where there was a runner on third in the 12th inning and they were going to have the base open. They wanted a chance at a double play in this game to put the runner on, and instead the guy threw it away and the winning run scored. So you might not see that at any other level but college now. So everybody's going to be watching college for that.
Now, before we let you go, I alluded also to the fact that the Yard Goats might finally be playing next month. What's your take?
Well, we're going to see. We're going to see what the Yard Goats, one of the things I'm watching now is they're going to eventually have one of these games where they're trying to see how they could prepare for the season. It's like a game where they're preparing to see. And UConn and UHA might play there on April 5th, so that's something to watch as they try to develop the stadium.
That's Frankie Graziano, sports producer at CPBN. Frankie, thanks for coming on, and you are very full of energy at 10 o'clock in the morning.
Well, thank you, and a happy, hearty good morning.
The show is produced by Jeff Tyson and Lydia Brown. Our technical producer is Kion Wolf. WNPR's executive producer is Katie Tolarski. I'm Lucy Nalpathanchil. Have a great weekend.